I hate to sound like a broken record, but we can't send you the CLE credits unless you put in a sign-in sheet when you can. And don't forget to sign out, and also an evaluation form. You don't have to sign your name, but it would be good. They really want us to do evaluations and suggestions for future seminars. There are also donation forms if you'd like to donate to the Business of Luck Institute. And we're also going to have a brunch in 2 weeks. Invitations, I'm sure, will be sent out. The next topic is professional malpractice. Chas v'shalom, we shouldn't know from it. But what are the halachic liability of clients in case of professional malpractice? Do you just give your fees back? Do you have to pay what would have been had you not been derelict in your duties? And to give that presentation is Rabbi Chaim Cohn. He's the Rav of the Shul. He's the Dean of Business Halacha Institute. And he's also dying in Kila Sadas Yishorin. And with utmost respect, I present to you Rabbi Cohn.
So you probably know that the only one to publicly claim that he has infallibility is the Pope. Short of that, I think all of us are human beings and by definition subject to error, mistake. And here the question comes up, to what extent is a person who is in the profession where people rely on his advice and so on and so forth, liable for any mistake that he did? Everybody understands that he's human, everybody understands that he could error. Nevertheless, does he assume responsibility or doesn't he? Does halacha require him to take responsibility? We know that, for example, there is a whole tractate, Masechta Tarius, that deals with the high succulents of Klal Yisrael having made mistakes. You're talking about the Sanhedrin even, making mistakes not only in the legal practice, so to say, but on religious issues. We have Kabbalah here in this case, and so on and so forth. And then, furthermore, in another tractate, another Masechta, in Sanhedrin, we have a lot of pertaining to dying. Made a mistake. Issued a false verdict for whatever reason, and consequently is held responsible for it. To what extent is he responsible? In Shulchan Aruch, there's a whole simon about it, Simon Chof Hei, that discusses the parameters of the liabilities of a dayan who erred. Now, what are the issues that we have to discuss here? You see, generally speaking, what we do know is that halacha adheres to very, very strict structure of whatever person is obligated or not obligated to do in any area. When it comes to our subject here, there are three different disciplines which need to be taken into consideration. A person who consults, what is he exactly? He's an employee. Is he a contractor? Is he giving advice out of his free will? What is it exactly? So obviously we're talking here about a professional setting, and as such, we're not talking a person who's just giving advice out of his free will, coming over and say, you know, I want to give you good advice, buy the stock. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about a case where a person is engaged in professional behavior, And as such, he's taking responsibility in this other way for any advice that he's giving. And here the question will be, to what extent do we say that this assumption, this assuming of responsibility, is halachically valid? First of all, in halacha we have, as I said earlier, three different structures that we could apply in this particular case. One would be a person who is what we call in halacha an orev. An orev is a guarantor. A guarantor, in the classic situation, is somebody who says, lend money to this person, and I take responsibility that in case it doesn't pay back, I will cover your damages. I will cover the bill. It's very interesting, but it's very interesting. In fact, the implied obligation here would be just the opposite. If I say lend money, what I really mean to say is that the person is reliable and so on and so forth. I didn't even cross my mind that I will have to pay. Nevertheless, we say you do have to pay because the Torah says, Halacha says, that your acceptance of responsibility for somebody else's money in this particular situation obligates you as well. But it's a chiddush. It's something which is novel. You wouldn't say so simply that you should be obligated. After all, we understand that the mindset should be just the opposite. But that's what it is. Don't give advice if you know that at the end of the day you could be liable for that. In the case of Orev, we say even if you're not professional, even if you're just a person who is being consulted and being asked, could we lend this money? We are saying yes. If you say go and lend it, you could do that. Now, there's a very interesting distinction in Halacha about it. Namely, what happens if I don't say lend, but I'm saying the person is safe to be lent money to? Two different things. In other words, I don't say go and do it. I'm not telling the person who consults me, go and lend it. I'm saying something else. I'm saying this fellow is reliable. My testimony is about the person, but not giving directives how the money should be handled. Now, you see, this is a very interesting discussion because the classic case of an orif, the classic case of a person who is a guarantor, is when he, in this or other way, has assigned the lender, so to say, to be almost his messenger to lend money. And this is the root for his responsibilities. If I say, go and lend him, so what you do is you appoint him almost like your messenger to lend money. And consequently, this is the reason for your responsibility. So although you're not a professional, you're just a layman, but being that you said, please, pass on money to this person, it's like you appoint him to be your messenger, your shliach, and consequently, eventually, if it happens to be that money is not being paid back to your messenger, you assume the responsibility, this is the implied responsibility, that you accepted to pay him back. Okay, that's what halacha is. Now, what happens, however, if I say that this person saved to lend too? Okay, so then I did not really say, clearly, lend the money. I gave testimony about the character of the person. Now, how about halacha in this case? Interesting enough, halacha is that even in this case, I'm reliable. I'm liable for this. That's what the end of the day is. But we cannot obligate him because of the halacha of an orif. He's not a guarantor here. I never guarantee to you that you will be paid, that you will be paid back your money. I didn't guarantee that. I only testified, I give testimony on the person's reliability. So why am I obligated in this particular case to compensate the lender? Here, the poskim, and this is, it seems to be most of them held that this is the reason of it. It's a different structure. It's a structure of tort. It's mazik. But it's not a regular tort. We're talking about consequent damages. Consequent damages, gami, as we call it in halacha, gami. If I tell you that this person is reliable, and it was enough reason that you should rely on my opinion, so then we are saying the consequent damages, namely that the borrower did not pay back, is enough of a reason to obligate you to pay. Now, it's very interesting because you see the halachas of Gami, the halachas of consequent damages in halacha are very complicated and subject to many, many conditions. In other words, what we need always to have, which is with the precondition any dealing of Gami, in any dealing of Gami, is that it has to be that if I do an action that directly causes consequent damages, then I'm liable. But if this is not the case, then we cannot obligate you. Here it seems to be, it's not so simple, to say that when I gave you information that this person is good enough to pay to lend to, that is enough to consider that at the outset that already I triggered the consequent damages. But this is the halacha. That's what we do see. Okay, so we have here till now two different structures. The first structure was Orev, the guarantor. The second structure was Gami. Gami means consequent damages. Now there's the third one. The third one is the guardian, the shomer. Shema now is always when I assume responsibility on somebody else's object, whatever that should be. Now, again, there's a whole passion that are about it, as we know very well. And it's a subject to certain Gezeiras HaKosov. Gezeiras HaKosov means here a decree by the Torah, a chok, something very Torah exempted, not logically necessarily, not logically for the human beings, where we say the obligation applies or does not apply. For example, if you're talking about assuming responsibility on anything which is in gufo mamon, with other words, it is not intangible, we're not talking about tangible assets. And non-tangible assets are, for argument's sake, right, when you're talking about, for example, one could very well argue that this is a non-tangible, for example, stocks. Stocks are non-tangible. Anything which is a loan document is a non-tangible object. So when we're talking about the content of Shoma, unless there was an explicit obligation that the person accepted on himself, not because of the terrorist prohibition, but because the person accepted an extraordinary obligation on himself, he will not be liable for that. So therefore, for example, if you have a stockbroker, the stockbroker gave information about something, it's a good stock, whatever it should be, and you know that the stockbroker knows that it's him, the professional, that is here giving advice that the customer, the client, is relying on. So then if you're talking about Shoma would be a difficult thing to say here that he should be obligated to pay because of the concept of Shoma. We're talking about Engel for a moment. We're talking about non-tangible object. So what we have to say here is that if there is an obligation, it's for something else. It's because the halachas orev, now it's here, there's an implicit understanding, and an implied understanding, sorry, there's an implied understanding that he obligated himself to say, similar where we say, you said that this person is safe enough to lend to. Here you said, it's safe enough to assume that this stock is a good stock. Okay, so then we are saying it's like orev, something similar to orev. Maybe it's concept with damages, difficult to say, to the contrary. I never thought that this is a bad investment. I thought it's a very good investment. Now, if really the chances of investments are not really completely predictable, so again, we're talking about gami, it's very difficult to say that. You cannot say really gami on something which is not 100% safe, predictable. You could say when you're talking about an olive, that you could say. You could say, well, I think it's a proper investment, it's a good investment. To the point where I'm telling you, yes, you could, without thinking twice, invest over there. Olive could apply. Olive could apply. Now, having said so, not only do we have now three different structures, as we said earlier, namely, a din of olive, a din of mazik, and a din of a shoma, there's a third structure, the fourth structure. What's the fourth structure? And really, the fourth structure is probably the most important as far as we are concerned. It's the famous concept of minhag hasochim. Minhag hasochim means whatever becomes the custom between people. Now, the custom could be rooted either because this is the law of the land and everybody accepted the law of the land to be the defining factor in this engagement between people. Or it could be even not because it's a clear law of the land. There's no din machus about it. But nevertheless, we are saying that people understood it, that this should be the governing system whereby we hold and whereby we accepted our relationship. That could be. Minegasofi, that certainly could be. Now, furthermore, in within the concept of minegasofi could be something else too. And this is now really when we're talking about the core of our subject. You see, there are different disciplines that people could be engaged in. A person could become, what should I say, a handyman. Does a person have a license to be a handyman? I don't think so. Maybe he should, but you don't need to. Right? You write over there, Moshe's, that's good enough, and you don't need anything else. There is no, it's not a profession that by definition, the character of this profession requires licensing. But there are professions which by definition need a licensing. Chazal recognized that we have a distinction between those kind of professions. Therefore, for example, you're talking about a person who is a medical practitioner, a person is a doctor. So Chazal understood it's impossible to have a person trusted with healing somebody else, dealing with somebody else's life, unless that he had Rishus Beis Din. With other words, the Beis Din, who was the government of Klal Yisrael at that time, in many ways, issued a license, permitting to act in this profession. Otherwise, he cannot do that. Similarly also, a dayan, a person who adjudicates, so you need to know what you're doing. You need to not only to know what the halacha is, you also have to have enough experience to execute what you know and to handle it. Therefore, if somebody became a dayan, so he had to receive smicha. It's smicha has a different understanding, but when we are talking about the smicha as it's being quoted in the Paschim, as we say, the Ashkenazim, we call smicha, what it really means is that we have a higher authority that testifies and licenses this person to practice in the area of Dayanus, to become a person who could adjudicate. Otherwise, he was not permitted to paskin. He was not permitted to give an opinion. Although many say that this principle of smicha is not in halachas of benodam lechaveru, without an adjudicating in terror, rather issuing a psak in mitzvah heter, religious matters. Nevertheless, it is true that a person should not act as a dayan, practice as a dayan, unless he is licensed, so to say, quote unquote, being authorized by somebody who saw to it that and testifies that this person is qualified to act in this profession. So therefore, we have halacha again, and we understand it because we think it's other people's money, right? You have other professions which, by definition, and again, by the character of the profession, although halacha would not say that you need a license, but government requires a license. For example, a stockbroker, right? Stockbroker would need to have this other license. He has to have a certain training. He needs to have a certain understanding of the matter that he's dealing with before he gives advice. In other words, we do find that here in this particular case, government, people understood that we cannot let anybody give professional advice unless we are convinced that he's qualified enough to this kind of advice. So it's not really so that now halacha required it because of the halacha requirements, because the dinah required it, but because, again, dinah machusel required it. Would we say that since we don't find a sefer shecholoch, we don't find here in any paragraph of the shecholoch that says that you required it, so therefore we also require it because dinah machusel, because the law of the land requires licensing, we should also say it? Yes, absolutely yes. And the reason is, we have, you know, the famous halacha of takonas hamedina. Takonas hamedina means that if we would have been government and we would see the system, how commerce is functioning today, we would have come to the same conclusion. And we would have said, no question about it, there is a profession called a stockbroker, which in order to do a proper job and to be able to give advice, professional advice, it needs to have training, and we need to have tested the person that is qualified to give this kind of advice. And consequently, if we give advice without being trained, and without having licensed, and without being proven that he knows what he's doing, he could be halachically liable. He could be halachically liable. To what extent could he be liable? Okay, so here you see, let's come back. That's a different thing. Now let's come back to what we are discussing. If you have a professional, the professional errant, the person is a professional, but he made a mistake. So here you see, there is a distinction to be drawn between somebody who is being paid for his services or somebody who is not being paid for his services. Right? For example, a shochet who claims to know Shchita well, so therefore if he paid for his services, there will be a different criteria to hold him liable than if he wasn't paid. Or, once upon a time, the similar profession to what we would call today a stockbroker, although it's not a stockbroker, it's a shulchani. A shulchani is really the person with a banker. It's a banker, right? The person who exchanged money. But I think for the sake of for what we are discussing today, trading any kind that have monetary value, I would say a stockbroker would be a much better example. So if you turn to a stockbroker and you ask him professional advice and he's being paid for it. There's a difference between if he's licensed and being paid or if he's licensed and not being paid. In other words, a person could claim if he was not paid, although he gave you advice, but you know what? I wasn't paid for that, and consequently, probably the reason why what I gave why the advice that I gave you did not work out properly is not so much because I was negligent, but rather because, you know, you had a misfortune, bad mazel, misfortune. Certainly, no question about it. If there was negligence, clear negligence involved here in any situation, it would be mechuyev to pay for that. But if this is not the case, and it was not explicitly said to him, look, I really rely on you, which is called in the halacha, lo kesamichne, I rely on you. Just we went to him because everybody knows Yankel is a professional stockbroker. He knows his job, and consequently, I now would like to hear his opinion. Okay, did you pay him? No, I was a miser. I didn't want to pay him. Fine, now you pay the price. The price is that you lost your money, and you cannot. You have no recourse, and you can't go back to him because he's going to tell you, M-I-S-E-R, that you cannot come back to him and say you are liable and you have now to compensate for the damages that I had because you didn't pay him. Yes, what is true is something else. What would be if he's not licensed? Or he makes an impression of Chas v'Shalom that he's licensed, but he's not licensed. Then we are saying you had no business to give advice. That's a very interesting halacha. You had no business to give advice. And therefore, if you gave advice and you were not licensed, you were not a real professional, and there was enough reason to assume that the person who took your opinion, your assessment and your opinion, and upon which you did whatever you did, then, halakhically speaking, there could be an argument that the person is liable for that. Again, license is important. If you don't have license, we are not certain that the person is doing his job professionally. Similarly, it happens, we have now the same situation, when you're talking about a lawyer, you're talking about a medical practitioner, the same story. A person is a lawyer, and he didn't handle his case professionally. He did not prepare papers professionally, and so on and so forth, in a way that, according to professional standards, he could be held liable. Then, we are saying he will be liable for the consequent damages. Since people relied on him, and it was enough reason to rely on him, he's been paid for it, so then, therefore, anything, although unintended, but, you know, he missed this or that, whatever, there should be over some kind of language, doesn't matter. Then, in this particular case, he could be held liable for that. Furthermore, you see, there's a very interesting discussion. We're talking about malpractice. Today, there is an industry called insurance. Right? Insurance is an inherent part of today's structure of commerce. Right? It's an industry on its own and so on and so forth. Now, anybody in those kinds of industries, in the licensed industries, by definition, has insurance for this very reason that we just discussed, because he will eventually be held liable for having errored in his judgment or did any kind of mistake where he could be accused of not having done a professional job. Therefore, you have an industry called insurance. The question is as follows. Halakhically speaking, to what extent is this insurance here halakhically defendable? Do we say that since there is insurance, one is permitted to go after the insurance of this practitioner? Or do we say no? You know, I never made an arrangement with your insurance. This is in particular a question when we are talking about not only about the direct damages caused by this person's error, but we're talking about if there are punitive damages. If there are other kinds of damages that are being imposed on the person because of his misbehavior. So that's the question. Do we say in such a situation, halacha would require and say that yes, in such a situation, you also the person could be held liable? That's the famous discussion. So I could tell you my opinion, right? Even though the danger that you won't come to Basin here, I don't care. But I could tell you my humble opinion on this matter. I do feel that although insurance, as we know very well, is an industry and there are all kinds of people's interest in this kind of situation, meaning in the industry itself, and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, there's a very good point to argue and say that insurance should have here a deterrent role, a deterrent role. If you know that your insurance is going to jack up quite high. And eventually, because of your misbehavior, because something that you did a mistake, it's not only that it affects you directly in this particular case, but eventually also your insurance payments are going to hike up. Furthermore, that it might be you will end up with punitive damages, a person will be double careful before he does anything. Now, could it inhibit on the person's performance to begin with? It could, certainly. It's like anything in life, you have a double sword. It's a double-edged sword, no question about it. Nevertheless, in my opinion at least, I think it's certainly true that the deterrent factor is important. And therefore, the din, the halacha of insurance is included into the structure, what we would call tikkun hadinim. In other words, when we are talking, for example, a medical practitioner, who could be sued eventually for having done an error which is not defendable, and consequently cause damage, if it's now physical damage or other damage, mental damage, doesn't matter, right? If because of that there are punitive monies added to the bill itself, I think halakhically it's justified to demand it. Because this is part of the relationship that was inherently established between the client and the medical practitioner. That when at the outset he needed to understand that in case that he makes a mistake, then we are all subject to the tikkun hadinim, to whatever here the law of the land would impose on you for the deterrent purpose. So therefore, this certainly would be true. You see, we have a very similar situation, in my opinion at least, when you're talking about a person who created car accident. Now, if you in a car accident, certainly you could go to an insurance company and claim money. The person who was negligent and caused here this accident, right? Not only will he be liable for repair and so on and so forth, it might end up later on also with all kinds of punitive damages later on. Absolutely, could be. And all of this is because of the law of the land. It might be halakhically speaking that there's not enough reason here to obligate him to pay. In my opinion, since one is not permitted and should not drive without a license, and sometimes even the license should be taken away at a certain age, in my personal opinion, at a certain age a person should not drive anymore. No question about it. You shouldn't have a person 85 years old, as healthy finds himself, he should be on the road, my opinion. Take it or leave it, right? But certainly, there should be a certain examination of people's qualifications to drive around. To this end, we have licenses. Wherever you have a license, it implies, it tells you something. It tells you that this very profession is something which needs to have some kind of supervision, governmental supervision. And the person would be held liable for not doing it according to the professional expertise. A professional expertise here means even a regular driver. A regular driver, you don't know how to drive, don't. You shouldn't be on the road. If you don't drive according to the rules, at the end of the day, you will be held liable for that. So therefore, my opinion, it might be controversial. Thank you very much for understanding it. I think it's not so simple. I don't believe it's not so simple that you cannot demand in such a situation punitive damages. Depends on the case, obviously. Now, you see, there are all kinds of cases which already we had it already, so to say. What about a melamed? A teacher doesn't teach any license. Well, if I had to say something, I would say that it should be not one melamed, not one magichir permitted to be a magichir or melamed. Melamed means, you know what I mean, melamed? You do know. Very good. Okay. What do you say? One should not be a melamed, one should not be a magichir, one should not be a shishiva. Before he was licensed in this profession. Now, Rabbi, you're really controversial. And I don't mean it anti-establishment. I mean it for the sake of the subject itself. And I'll tell you why. You see, it doesn't mean that everybody who is able and ready to say a good Shikra Torah is necessarily a good melamed. Is not necessarily a person who knows how to handle a classroom, who understands a talent. It's a profession. It's a profession that requires talent, training, and so on and so forth. Therefore, there is license to that. Consequently, you know what would happen if Chas v'Shalom, if now this unlicensed Magichir or Melamed, Ari, just tell you, let me put into the picture. I'm talking about Melamdim, Magidishir, who are not licensed. Oh! He says, well, in my humble opinion, I do believe that the Melamed and Magichir, anything of this sort, anyone who is in the teaching profession, needs a license. If I'm not mistaken, you cannot be in public school system, you cannot be a teacher if you're not licensed. Am I right or wrong? Please raise your hands. Who says no? Okay. Everybody says that I'm right. Okay, so then to paraphrase Chazal, right? Loite kanuski pundikis, it should not be that teaching Torah, anything of this sort, should be less what others understand. But I do believe we're talking about din and nefashos. And din and nefashos here in this particular case is certainly correct and right that it is required to be a license. And therefore, if something has shalom happens, eventually the person would be held liable. Halachati. That's not going to happen. Don't worry, I know. But I'm just giving you an example how I feel about matters of this sort. Anything which we do see by behavior of people, by behavior of society, that it needs to be licensed, it implies that the person who is doing it needs to take responsibility. And consequently, we do find in Aloha too. It says, therefore, it's often Aloha, Aloha and Simishim Vov, and you're talking about the same simon that discusses the halachas of the shulchanim, of the banker, stockbroker, whatever you call him, the person who deals with other people's money, in that very simon, you have also, just a little bit later, the halacha of a person who was appointed as a melamed. And this fellow, if he made a mistake, he will be fired instantly if he made a mistake. In other words, the same ketur that we apply to the shulchanim, to the stockbroker, to the banker, who deals with other people's money, which we say is very serious. Kal v'chomer, although most of you are talking about dealing with people's lives. This is the reason why we would say that you need a license of a doctor, for a doctor. Now, today, we do not have a Beis Din, as it used to be, who gave permission to practice medicine. That says in Aloha, of an Aloha, right? So what do we do today? So therefore, what you need to do is you need to have a license from university. You have to have practice. Excuse me? Yes, you have to have a license for that. You cannot just practice like this. A person said, well, I understand very well what it's all about. Could be, but never do you need a license. Consequently, we're talking for example, alternative methods of medicine, right? Alternative methods. Which might be very well, which might work very well, but it's not everybody who checked the website and found out what this is all about, that he is able to practice it and open up any kind of office and say, I could give you advice exactly which diet is good for you, and so on and so forth. You cannot do that. And consequently, if eventually he does it, halachically speaking, he will be not liable for any kind of damage that he caused. Because we are talking about a profession that requires license. And if he requires license, so then again, halachically speaking, he will be held responsible for that. And if halacha says now, if the law of the land says now, in such a situation we are going to impose on you punitive damages, my humble opinion would be, yes, that's exactly what it is, because it's Tikkun Abdin. And if it's Tikkun Abdin, we would have established exactly the same structure that should deter people not to do things where to any kind of behavior that could end up with Chas v'Shalom, a person being damaged as such. So, you see, there is, however, an exemption to this whole rule. We do not want to inhibit people practicing what they are doing. We don't want to do that. What we want to do is only to see, to deter, but not to inhibit. And there's a fine line between those two. Therefore, for example, in Aloha you have Aloha, what happens to me? What happens to you have a dying? Man, the dying says, to adjudicate people, it's not only enough that people will be upset on me, but at the end of the day, they really could prove that I made a mistake. And how could it be that I should not make a mistake? I'm just human. And if this is the case, my empty bank account will be empty out even furthermore. So therefore, if this is the case, I don't want to be a dying. Halacha is that if people accepted the dying to be the dying who has to adjudicate, they could force him to do it. It's called halacha himchu rabbi malein, which means in this particular case they could force him to adjudicate. Then, again, it implies the opposite. It implies not that he should be liable for everything he's doing, but it implies, to the contrary, that we forgive, we forgive him in case that he erred. And again, we're not talking about negligence. We're talking about a situation when it could very well be a person could error. That in such a situation, we are saying that although, according to regular criteria, a person should be liable for what he is doing, in this particular case, because we forced him to do it, it's different. In other words, we're talking about public office. If people are elected to public office, you see, here that's the difference. If a person is not elected, if he's not an elected judge, he is a person who kept an arbitration. Then, being that people came voluntarily, and being that he was not obligated to accept his arbitration, and we understand that he's being paid for his services, at least schabetele, whatever there should be. And we understand that he's a dying who needs to know what he is doing because otherwise he would not be permitted to practice to begin with. So then we are saying in this particular case, if he is a regular arbitrator, not appointed to be an arbitrator, not elected to, not by elected office, then he's subject to all the laws that we just mentioned. However, what happens in an opposite case? What happens if he's in elected office? If there would be such a case. Let us all forget we have such a situation. Let us all, there's a structure of a basin, right? You have a structure of a basin. People are put there by the system. In other words, people come there not because, people don't sit there because they voluntarily offered to be there, but they were appointed to it. Now, it's certainly true the person offered himself to the job. That's true. But at the end of the day, he's been elected to the job. And once he's been elected to the job, it means the one who puts him to this seat, one who puts him into this office, are the people themselves. If it's the people themselves that they put him into office, so then he is, again, exempted from the liabilities of a regular dying. That's in Bichur Rabbi Malei. It's an interesting exception. The interesting exception is that what happens if you take a dying who says clearly, you know, let me tell you people, I don't know halacha. No, that's such a thing. You have such people. There's still honest people around. And, you know, and he says, I don't know halacha. But you want me to say, I'm fine. But, you know, if you accept me, so that's it. I mean, whatever I say goes. Then in this particular case, being that people were informed about his ignorance in advance and accepted his ignorance to be, not to inhibit his qualification to act as an arbitrator, then he's an arbitrator, even if eventually they say, you passed against and clear halach and shulchan aruch. For the simple reason. Because they knew in advance that he said that I cannot really say that I will adjudicate it according to halach. It might be very well be that I erred, and therefore at the end of the day, he cannot be held liable. But, you see, today, for example, there's another case also, you know. What happens, for example, you have a kehillah. Yeah, but seeing the fact you have kehillahs today, and if the rabbi says, well, you become a dying here, you become a dying there, and so on and so forth, he is like an elected official. And being is like an elected official, therefore, he is exempted from the liabilities of a regular dying, because he is now acting not on his own accord, he is really acting here because he was elected and therefore put here in charge, and people being part of this kehillah said, Himchu Rabbi Malein, we here accepted to have his authority, and therefore, this is what will now exempt him, will take away from his abilities, as we said earlier. One thing which I need to mention, and which I didn't say really, and this is, there is always, when you're talking about dinim of Gami and Gromo, there is always the concept of what we call Lotzesi Vishomayim, meaning a person could be held to a higher standard halachically, where Beitin cannot obligate him to pay, but nevertheless, it's correct and right that he should seek to compensate. Now, the situation like we said earlier, when, for example, according to the dinim of Gami, or Grama, we cannot really be moitzi mamon, we cannot obligate him to pay, but if it's really the case that we would say that his error was of a kind, we should have been more careful, and it was a situation that we would say, yes, it's Gami, but it's Gami b'shogeg, but it could be still first, it wasn't an oinus. It wasn't something that he could not have taken care of in it was a shogeg. A shogeg is a situation when a person was not enough careful, not enough, but we cannot say it's an oinus, but we cannot say it's a mezid either, we cannot say he did it intentionally. Then there's a concept which is called lotzei d'shamayim. Lotzei d'shamayim means that the person should see to it, to compensate other people, the people that he be damaged, for whatever damage they did to them, although it's not moitzi bebeizdin, but it's in itself should be enough. Right. I think I covered everything. Yes. No, but time? Yes, please.
Practical question. Have you ever heard of or seen a practice carrier agree to come to Bezdin to litigate a practice dispute?
Well, they would come to Bezdin with the intention not to pay. But if they come here, I'm not so sure about it. I don't know what my colleagues would say. And it's also not so clear. I'm not saying that it's true about every case, you know? Yes.
I'm just trying to think of a lot of these malpractice claims, often they're made as defenses to trying to pay. The lawyer rendered the bill, there's a dispute. Let's say the person is someone who we know will not go to Bezdin, or he tried to take him to Bezdin. So they raised the malpractice claim as a defense to paying the bill. So now the question is, what do they start to talk about? Well, maybe there's some cases, you know, let's say it's Bidei Shamayim. What if the question is, what's the standard of care, right? The client lost the case, right? The lawyer thought it was a great case, but the judge thought differently.
So, I do agree. Something I do agree. It's certainly true that the gray area is quite large here. I do agree. It's not black and white. We're talking certainly more practice in a situation when it's black and white. If it's not black and white, you cannot obligate them. I do agree. Right?
In terms of malpractice.
In malpractice, absolutely. And that this will be the first line of defense that it wasn't that it was also the client would like here to extract money from him with that argument. I do agree. I'm not saying otherwise. People would like to take advantage of it. I do agree, you know. And they would like to sit in court for who knows for how long, you know, and to pressure the person until he's willing to pay. I understand the dynamics, what could really happen in real life. I'm not saying otherwise. I'm here talking, you know, simply about the logic parameters. Now, those are the logic parameters. How to apply it in real life, I understand it's difficult. You know, whenever you end up in the court system, and the Beijing system, doesn't matter, in any kind of a system, it's difficult, you know, that people take advantage of the system in order to carry through their agenda. I don't have to tell you this is true, you know. Your personal.
The same situation. Let's say you're doing malpractice cases, right? So the question is.
You mean you yourself, the lawyer who does the malpractice?
No, I'm saying, the lawyer's doing medical malpractice cases.
Right.
So the question is he being part of being mitzi mamon?
Shalakidin.
So
I'm saying it's not. Okay. That's what I'm saying. No,
okay.
It's not.
Right.
If he had the right to go to court, right? I'm not dealing with that part. If he was right to go in court or not, but if Mr. Dadini was right to go in court, if, for whatever reason,
okay,
and
so
I'm saying it's not so simple.
That would be the issue. Right? If there's insurance, might say, well, that's the practice area. Everybody goes to court. Now, since Bezdin could give the same relief, right? Because Bezdin can also give punitive damages to the point where time is.
Yeah, but not everybody would agree to that. But not everybody would agree to that, and therefore I understand people wouldn't want to go to Bezdin. I understand that. I'm not saying otherwise.
And there would be Bezdin
Rabbi. I don't know. You have to talk to Rabbi Marburger. He's the expert. Thank you. Thank you very much.